An accident insurance through the employer may include benefits for hospitalization as well. So, you know, if somebody is injured critically, so they might need a hospital admission, they might need a confinement and an inpatient rehab after. So, for example, let's say, you know, a few employees of an organization were injured in a sort of an in-house, you know, problem, like let's say a slab collapsed and luckily nobody died, but you know, some of them have got lacerations, some of them have got injuries, and they need to be rehabilitated. So there might be a small rehab center, a part of a hospital, where they will be recuperating for the next 2-3 months before they get operational. Now, additional benefits would be in the case of an unfortunate death, okay, which is something which is really unfortunate, or dismemberment, like let's say, you know, the hand is cut from a particular place, that particular member of the body is dismembered, it is cut. Loss and paralysis. So, you know, because of the injury to the spinal cord or the brain, it might relate it to a partial or a complete paralysis, or supplementary benefit for lodging. So all these are the additional benefits, plus guaranteed acceptance. So hospitals accept those people, they cater to those people, convenient payroll deduction and portable coverage. So these are some additional aspects of the health, you know, insurance or accidents policy. Now we come under life insurance. Okay, so we've discussed about accident insurance. Now we look at the concept of life insurance. So life insurance in general context is needed to have a savings plan for the future, so that there is a constant source of income after retirement. So life insurance comes under various headings. It's not just related to death of that particular person, but also may relate to a superannuation or continuation of you know, the person's livelihood. So for employees, life insurance protects the spouse, that's the wife or the husband, and the children from potentially devastating financial losses. So let's say there is you know, a person working for a factory, and he is you know, aged about 59, and unfortunately, while lifting something heavy, he encounters a cardiac arrest. And the cardiac arrest is so severe that while taking them to the hospital, the person expires, okay, passes away. Now what happens is, since the company has already, you know, insured him, then for the next few years, the sum that is received under the insurance will be utilized by the family. The wife, who is also elderly, so the person was 59, the wife may be 55, and they might have children who are studying. So this will help them overcome the devastating financial losses, because the life of the primary bread earner has been lost at work. It also provides financial security, as stated, helps to pay off debts. So just imagine this person has recently brought, you know, he's bought a flat. He's bought a 1 BHK, he was living on rent, and he has had to pay as a monthly EMI some 20,000 rupees. Okay, so now if he is expired and his 45,000 rupees, which was a salary, is not going to be credited. So what will happen is, if he is insured for a sum of some 25 lakhs, then that amount, okay, or a part of that amount will be credited in his wife's account, and it might act to pay that EMI and their expenses. So this is what is done by the life insurance, and it helps to basically pay any medical or, you know, the final expenses. So many employers will offer basic life insurance to their employees as a part of the employee benefits package. The benefit of getting life insurance cover by the employer is that you have a pre-existing medical condition such as diabetes. So it may become more difficult to qualify for a traditional life or a term insurance. So this is what is important to understand. So the employer is bearing certain conditions in the insurance policy, which makes their people eligible. And since it's lucrative for the life insurance companies to enroll people in a group, so such conditions may, you know, be given a kind of a relaxation by the insurance organizations. And even if there are certain stringent conditions or an increase in pay premium, the employer will be taking care of that. So it comes about as a major point of benefit for the employee. Now, Indian companies also provide something. Now, we've covered life insurance. We are now moving into retirement benefits. So Indian organizations or companies have historically provided their employees with health coverage, leave benefits, and statutory retirement programs. So here they are bound by law or mandated to provide retirement programs. Now, why is this so special to India? Because a lot of people in the prior generations have joined a company, like let's say they joined Bajaj or Tata or Mahindra's, and they work there for the next 40, 45 years. So this is a substantially huge amount of period as compared to today's IT professionals or people from the US or other developed countries. So this huge service duration, okay, is a need for the organization to compensate employees with a retirement program. Correct? They might have not looked outside for better prospects. They might have sacrificed on their growth. Hence, the organizations would rather be obligated for such a program. Now, with the current generation, HR managers have to rethink benefits altogether. Whatever the benefits may be, they work only when administered. So people also have to think of these aspects from the current context. Now, the retirement benefits offered commonly in India are falling under these four broad categories, which will be enlisted here and discussed in detail in the next slides. One being pension, the other being gratuity, the third one provident fund, and the next one is leave encashment. I believe most of these we are aware of. Nevertheless, we will discuss these in further detail. So pension schemes in India can be broadly classified. So what's a pension? So after a person, you know, completes a certain period of time in the company and retires, so these are all post-retirement, yeah? So they will get certain benefits. Now these are classified under or into policies under government sectors and private sectors provided to their employees. Policies purchased by individuals from insurance companies can also be candidates for pension. Like you pay today, you are paying, let's say, a Tata AIA or an LIC or ICICI Prudential a certain amount, which gets accumulated, compounded. And let's say you are right now 45 years old, and within the next 15 years, you will retire. So you will retire at an age of 60. You may work as a consultant later, but after 15 years, you will get a sum assured, okay, which will act as a pension. So this is what we is referred to policies purchased by individuals from insurance companies. So you will pay a certain premium towards, getting a pension on a later basis. So policies under government sectors and private sectors provided to their employees, so they provide certain plans. So legacy pension plans in India are limited to certain industries. So it is not meant for every industry, okay? It's meant for industries like banks, mines, plantations, railway, and others, okay, were created. So in other cases, due to union pressure, so if you notice, many of these industries were unionized, and hence they pushed for some pension plans, which are now known as legacy. Legacy means they are, they've been run for a long period. Very few private companies sponsor pension plans in India. So if you notice, when we had liberalization done, and I believe in the year 2000 onwards, where private insurance companies, so they came, from the Americas or Europe or Singapore, and they forged an alliance with an Indian organization. Like an ICICI had a Prudential with it, a Tata had an AIG, which is now an AIA, and so on. So what they do is they behave like a government organization, except for the fact that you know, some portion would be taken for pension. Here you have to pay explicitly. So you have to pay a sort of a premium for that pension to be given to you at a later stage. Huh? So there is accumulation, a compounding, and it's a sort of a future investment. Now this has to be done in the case of private companies or those industries that do not fall under the purview of pension. In this context, the minimum eligibility period for receipt of pension is 10 years, correct? So a central government servant or an employee retiring in accordance with the pension rules is entitled to receive superannuation. So this is also, okay, a term which is synonymous with pension, on completion of at least 10 years. Now what this means is, if you join a government organization aspiring that, okay, you'll get a pension, and you say, okay, I'm just going to work for 4 years. So that does not qualify you for a pension. So you have to work for a substantial 1 decade or a complete 10 years to qualify for a pension thereupon. So for example, if you've chosen to join a government college as a professor, yeah, so you will have to work for a minimum of 10 years, okay, to apply for this. Like, so this is of course pertaining to a central government servant, and that particular college has to be related to a central government. Now, policies under government sectors and private sectors, again, we will look at examples. So for example, if total qualifying service is 30 years and 4 months, so that's a 61 half year periods, pension will be calculated as under. So pension amount will be equal to R divided by 2 multiplied by 61 and a half periods divided by 66, where R represents average reckonable emoluments for the last 10 months of the qualifying service or the last pay drawn as opted by this government servant. So this is a calculation which is applicable, and as you can understand, the minimum criteria is the passing of at least 10 years for this to be eligible. Minimum pension presently is rupees 3,500 per month, and maximum limit on pension is 50% of the highest pay in the government of India presently, which is 45,000 rupees per month. So pension is payable up to and including the date of the death. So if an employee survives till the age of 85 and is retired at 60, so he will keep getting pension till the date of his death. Now the next part is related to gratuity. Okay, so gratuity is a benefit plan that is mandated by law under the Act of Payment of Gratuity that provides a minimum lump sum payment of 15 days for each year of service. All right, now gratuity is a sum of money paid by an employer to an employee for services rendered in the company. Since tips are a function of culture, various countries have various gratuity limits that are doled out or given to the employees. The Payment of Gratuity Act was enacted in 1972 and applies to every shop or establishment within the meaning of the law for the time being in force in a state in which, now this is important students, in which there are 10 or more persons who are employed and on any day of the preceding 12 months. So an organization has to have 10 or more employees for the employee to receive gratuity. An employer may offer gratuity to his or her employees from his or her own pocket, or may take a group gratuity plan with an insurance provider. Yeah, so either of the things can work for the employees. Now here, through the use of this particular graphic, let's look at what are a few instances when you are eligible to receive gratuity? Yeah? So an employee should be eligible for superannuation. An employee retires. This is again a post-retirement or a post-separation plan. An employee resigns after working for 5 years. So like in the central government case, where a minimum of 10 years had to be worked in the organization to be eligible for a superannuation or a pension, here you have to work for at least 5 years for a gratuity eligibility. An employee passes away or suffers disability due to illness or accident can also be eligible for the gratuity. Now, some basics about gratuity will be discussed here. So, Gratuity Act is applicable to all establishments where number of employees are 10 or more. So, we've discussed this already. Charitable institutions and hospitals are also covered under the Act. It includes both commercial and non-commercial establishments like educational institutes, etc. And only basic and dearness allowance should be considered as wages for the purposes of the calculation of the gratuity. So here are some basics about gratuity. So let's look at the formula for gratuity payment. So let's work through an example. So if an employee leaves the company after 10 years, so as we know, after 5 years, they are eligible for a gratuity. And the last basic plus dearness allowance is 10,000 rupees. Then his gratuity will be paid as per the following formula. So this will be 10,000 divided by 26 multiplied by 15 multiplied by 10. Please note that the above formula will remain the same irrespective of the employee working in 5 days a week establishments. So through this particular formula, the gratuity will be generated, okay, and which will be paid after the employee leaves. Now we look at the concept of provident fund, which we had again discussed in the previous chapter. So a provident fund is an investment fund that is jointly established by the employer and employee, and its purpose is to serve as a long-term savings to support an employee upon retirement. For example, somebody who's working in the central government and they've been working for the last 45 years and have retired. Now, what will happen is after retirement, they will get a lump sum of what they had partly invested through the CTC and part was invested by the employer. So the Employee Provident Fund Organization of India, or EPFO, has instructed all organizations to put a fraction of the employees' salaries into the provident fund. Yeah. So what happens is a part of the salary is credited into the provident fund for that respective employee, and a part is taken from the employer's account as well. A provident fund thus is a form of social safety net into which workers must contribute a portion of their salaries and employers must contribute on behalf of their workers. So it's basically after retirement, if the person does not find any consulting job or any value addition and is able-bodied and has to again feed the mouths of the family. So if they have young children still, so if the marriage happens late or if there is a need where the family still has to be supported despite retirement, then this can be a sort of a social safety net. The money in the fund is then paid out to the retirees or in some cases to the disabled who cannot work. So this fund proves useful as a post-retirement benefit for the employees of any organization. So if a worker dies, now let's consider the scenario. If a worker unfortunately dies before receiving benefits, so his or her surviving spouse and children may be able to receive the survivor's benefit from the provident fund. Yeah. So the Employees Provident Fund Organization, which we have already seen, which is short formed or abbreviated to EPFO, is an organization which is tasked to assist the Central Board of Trustees, which is a statutory body formed by the Employees Provident Fund and Miscellaneous Provisions Act 1952. So this body oversees everything related to the Provident Fund. The Employees Provident Funds and Miscellaneous Provisions Act 1952 came into effect on March 5th of 1952. Six industries, namely cigarettes, electrical, mechanical or general engineering products, iron and steel, paper and textiles, of course made wholly or in part of cotton, wool or jute or silk, whether natural or artificial, came under implementation of the act in from with effect from 1st of November 1952. So these are those six industries which are, you know, under the jurisdiction of this specific act. Presently, the following three schemes are in operation under the act. The first one is the Employees Provident Fund Scheme of 1952. The Employees Deposit Linked Insurance Scheme of 1976, and Employees Pension Scheme of 1995. So this has essentially replaced the Employees Family Pension Scheme, which was incorporated in the year 1971. So these are some of the important schemes that are operational currently under the Employee Provident Fund Act. Now we will move on or progress to the topic of leave encashment. So most of the companies allow you or allow their employees to encash the unused balance of leaves during their tenure or service or during resignation. So as I had explained earlier, if there are about roughly 21 leaves, then not all leaves can be taken by an employee due to various reasons. So an employee is therefore entitled, okay, to encash them either, you know, on retirement or in the case they leave or resign from the job. So encashing the leave balance is also known as leave encashment. Now, government employees and tax treatment of leave encashment are some important points for us to understand. Now, under this, we need to understand that during the period of employment or service, if an employee encashes any leaves, the entire leave encashment amount is fully taxable. So this is something which is essential to be understood. At the time of retirement or separation or resignation, the leave encashment is fully exempted from income tax. At the time of termination of the employee, it is fully taxable. So there are various conditions that come into play, and thus the taxability also varies. A few other important points on leave encashment and taxation should be understood before we proceed to the next discussion. So leave credit is only on completed years of service. Yeah. So if it's 25 years, 6 months, it should be taken as 25 years. So it is rounded off to the earlier part. Yeah. So 6 months does not mean that they have completed a year. So it will be rounded off to the nearest year, which is 25 years. If leaves are credited and the rate of, say, 55 days leaves for each year of service, then calculation should be made at the rate of 30 days leave only for each year of service. So this is also something that we should be mindful about. Exemption limit of rupees 3 lakhs is the maximum that a taxpayer can claim in a lifetime. If you have claimed a tax exemption of rupees 1 lakh during a financial year on receipt of leave encashment, then a maximum exemption of rupees 2 lakh can only be claimed in the future years. So this is, again, these are some conditions that need to be understood holistically for us to avail of this facility. Now let's look at the next concept, which is employees' service benefits. So employers can offer a wide variety of benefits to their employees. Like in the last chapter, we had discussed about the ESOPs or the employee stock options that can be provided, which is now pretty common and popular in the IT sector of the industry. In this case, no real limit exists as to what can be included as an employee service. So maybe if somebody is doing a very good job after just 3 years of service, they can also be entitled to such benefits. Benefits and services for employees play a very important role in the culture of a company. So the more the benefits and services, the more encouraged or the more motivated would be the employees of that organization. Now these are some of the service benefits which we have already looked at earlier. Let's nevertheless look at them now. So childcare facility, so where there is a creche or some sort of arrangement done. For many of the IT organizations and manufacturing concerns, the employees can get their children in a company-owned creche and the child can remain there till the moment the parent moves out. The company car, so executives, they can avail of a company car. So the company pays or subsidizes the cost of purchasing a car and also at times pays for the fuel. Moving expenses. So if there is a relocation that is happening, let's say Mr. A is, promoted and transferred to Delhi branch of an MNC, currently working in Hyderabad. So moving expenses will be paid by the company for relocation purposes. Employee meal allowance. So subsidized meals will be provided or an allowance will be given to the employees. Educational assistance plans. So if somebody wants to get a higher education, that could also be under a part of the employee service benefits. Health services and medical expenses, which we've already discussed. Financial planning, so the company can involve financial planning consultants, internal and external, and these can help or aid with the financial planning. Transportation, pooling and parking. So today what's important is if employees can pool, okay, and come in a single vehicle, or they can avail the company's transportation and their parking facilities. And of course, social and recreational services. So a membership of maybe a club or a subsidized membership of an online, event creator or a website can be given as employees' service benefits. Another important element which can be provided as a benefit is the ESOPs, which we had discussed some time back. These are nothing but the employee stock option plans, okay, which is an employee benefit plan. It is issued by the company for its employees to encourage employee ownership in the company. ESOPs are employee stock option plans. Few call them as employee stock ownership plans in India. Now, as I had mentioned, a specific industry, which is the IT industry or IT firms, had started this trend, but now many companies in different sectors give ESOPs to their employees. Even the startups are depending on ESOPs to attract talent. In fact, in the last chapter, we had discussed about ESOPs, if you remember. Yeah, we had talked about the call related stock options, the put related stock options, the exercise price of these as well. Nevertheless, we'll have a quick discussion related to this concept. Now, ESOPs are generally awarded for performance or tenure of the employees with the company. Thus, they serve a twofold purpose for both the company and the employees. They act as a tool for motivation for employees for a basic reason that once they own a stock, they feel responsible for performance of the company as it determines the value of the stocks of the company. Now, this schematic tells us, what are certain advantages provided by ESOPs. The first one is aligning of the interest of the managers with those of the owners. So they will work hard. If they are given the employee stock options of their own company, they're going to work hard. They're going to work diligently and ensure that if they have purchased a call option, that the share goes higher with the performance and they are able to exercise that stock option on a later basis. In a non-cash compensation, so it's a non-cash compensation tool to compete for best human resources. So it's a sort of a recruitment tool as well, which gives an opportunity to incorporate or to cooperate to play, sorry, the corporate to pay without a reduction in book profits or accounting advantage. Sense of ownership and belonging amongst employees are developed. And of course, if you have an ESOP from the company, and if you leave the company, they may not, be profitable. So it leads to lower attrition and of course, boosted morale and greater effort on the part of the employees. Another advantage may be it's more equitable distribution of profits on the part of the employers. So when it comes to classifying ESOPs, it can be divided under two major categories, which are non-compensatory and compensatory in nature. So what are certain attributes or qualities of the non-compensatory plans? So the basic purpose of such plans is to either diversify ownership to include the employees or raise additional capital. So there are these two things which we look at. So probably giving ESOPs, if you give a lot of stock options, then there may be, the employers might be seen as a lot, correct? And to raise additional capital. So maybe people might, purchase certain ESOPs as well. Under a non-compensatory plan, the shares can be in the futures at the market price on the date of exercise. So this is also important. In the compensatory plan, this category, the employees are compensated. Now, what are the various stock options available in India? The first one is Employee Stock Option Scheme or ESOS. An Employee Stock Option Scheme or ESOS is a right to buy shares at a predetermined price. So employees get a predetermined price where they can buy shares. Upon vesting of options, employees can exercise the options to get shares by paying the predetermined exercise price. So let's say if the share of that organization is at 120 and employees, if the option reaches that, the employees can purchase or pay that price to get the exercise. They can exercise that to get the shares of that organization. There's another plan, which is the Employee Stock Purchase Plan or ESPP. An ESPP provides the employees an option to purchase company shares often at a discount on the fair market value at grant or on exercise. So employees get a distinct advantage of getting a discount. So let's say if the company shares are worth 1,000 rupees, the employees might get them at a discounted price, which will be beneficial if the prices, rise further. So they can either hold or they can sell those shares to generate a profit. The next is the plan term determines the date and the price at which the employee is entitled to purchase the company's stock. The next type is called as the restricted stock award. Under this particular scheme or plan, an employee receives an award of stock subject to certain underlying or conditions or restrictions. If the underlying conditions are not met, the shares are forfeited or cancelled. The employee is considered to be the owner of the shares from the date of award, along with an entitlement to receive dividends and voting rights. The last type of stock option scheme is known as restricted stock unit. So under this, an employee is awarded an entitlement to receive stock at some specified date in the future, subject to certain conditions. These conditions may relate to performance or tenure of the employment. So until shares are actually delivered, the employee is not a shareholder and does not have voting rights or rights to receive dividends. So students, this was a detailed look at the various ESOP schemes that are currently available to employees of different industries in India. And with this, we have completed a detailed discussion of the sort of benefit plans that are available to employees in India. So we have looked at a wide variety of these particular plans, right from incentives to the variable pay, to the bonuses, to the different methods of how leaves are provided, to the elements of provident fund. We've also looked at pensions, superannuation schemes by government and private insurance players, and aspects like an ESOP and the various schemes under it. So I think we have developed a good understanding here of these incentives provided. Thank you.